Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Episode 73 of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts in GOAP. I'm your host, Alex Espinoza, with my co-host, Dr. Hot Dog, Hal Gordon.
Hot dog!
And we have Steve Pastorino here. He's a former A's executive who made some waves with his comments during the A's public meetings with Nevada yesterday or last week during the first round of hearings. And as we're recording this, it's Monday night at about 7 o'clock. We still haven't heard much yet. But Steve, how you doing, man? How you doing with all these negotiations? It's just an ongoing kind of kick it down the can.
Yeah,
kind of thing, you know.
Thank you for having me. It's great to talk to A's fans. My first question is, where's the pizza guy? You know, pizza that guy. Like, it's great that we have Hal the hot dog guy, but like, where's the pizza guy? Like, has he weighed in? Do we know his opinion?
I haven't.
So the background of the pizza guy is what was it? So it was Roundtable Pizza. So Roundtable Pizza owned that ran the vending room, the pizza room. And then after COVID, they sold that to a franchisee. And the franchisee who owned it was like, we don't want to deal with any of this vending anymore. So
sounds like another classic case of ownership changed hands and fans got left out. If you run into the pizza guy, tell him that one of his fans says hi.
I will.
I'm happy to be here. In many ways, the 4 years I spent at the A's was the pinnacle of my career. I loved my time at the A's. Really interesting story about how I got to the A's in the first place. And I really thought on Wednesday, I was just testifying as a resident here in Clark County who has an interest in where my tax money is going to go and also has a little bit of insight about how the organization runs. And this whole thing sort of blew up. It's great. If we needed another person to talk about how important the A's are to the East Bay and how important the A's are to Oakland, I'm glad I could serve that purpose. Who knows where this is going to go? Just for the record, I believe that baseball, A's baseball, belongs in Oakland, belongs in the East Bay. That should be the starting point, not the end point that we're trying to get to. And I love baseball and I love Major League Baseball. I would love to have a Major League Baseball team at the corner of Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard in Las Vegas. I really don't want it to be the A's. We can talk about whatever. Thank you guys for having me, and hello to all my friends. I've heard from so many XA staffers, fans, friends, family in the Bay Area that have heard my remarks from the other night, also heard my son's remarks from the other night. And it speaks to how much we loved our time with the A's and in the East Bay. I miss it. Wish I could be there on Tuesday night for the reverse boycott. I think it's going to create some really interesting scenes that might make everybody at the A's and Major League Baseball a little bit uncomfortable. We'll see what happens.
And that's the goal. That's the goal. I think that there's not, you know, there's just not much that fans necessarily can do. You know, they have a lot more power in a place like Europe, which I think has a better, you know, way to structure their leagues and stuff. But here, you know, it truly feels that if one billionaire, you know, decides, you know, that they want to move, then it doesn't feel like there's much to do. So I am really proud and excited of all of these A's fans who've rallied for the this reverse boycott tomorrow, which is going to, which seems like more than you could possibly imagine doing in this situation. But, yeah. But Steve, I just want to, I just want to remind everybody, if they somehow aren't putting two and two together. So Steve is the former A's executive who spoke from the remote Las Vegas area.
Government building.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the most memorable snippet was the walking, talking bobblehead, but more substantively, you pointed out that the amount of money that the A's were offering, in community benefits was kind of a pittance. And in that there just had been sort of a lack of trust of what we can trust from the A's, from the top, the tippy top of the A's front ownership. So Steve, it's amazing that you've agreed to talk to us. I really appreciate that. Can you give us like a little bit of background about how you ended up with the A's and a little bit of information about how, what it was like to work in the front office of the A's? I don't think anybody listening probably knows that.
Sure. So both my parents grew up in San Francisco, more on the south side of the city. My father was a U.S. Foreign Service officer, a diplomat. So I spent half of my life overseas as a kid and the other half when we were in the States, primarily in Washington, D.C. So I didn't actually grow up in the Bay Area. My father had one sister. Even though I'm Italian, I don't have a giant Italian family. And my father and our side of the family were diehard Giants fans. And his sister went to Cal Berkeley and raised that side of the family in Oakland, Skyline High School grads, all my cousins, and they were diehard A's fans going back to the early 70s. And so it's always been my American League team. And I'll try and make this quick. 10 years ago, summer of 2013, my father passed away. And we had the services in San Francisco, and the day after, we wanted to go to a baseball game to honor my father. He loved baseball. He was a Giants season ticket holder. And the A's were in town and the Giants weren't. So we came over to the East Bay, went to see a very noteworthy game, A's versus Yankees, Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter's last game in Oakland. Day game started at 1 o'clock on a whatever that would have been, a Thursday maybe, and ended 18 innings and 6.5 hours later with a Nate Freiman bloop single to over the shortstop's head in left field. And my family, there were 35 of us, friends and family, who went to the game, stayed to the end. And I knew a few people in the A's organization, and I said I didn't even tell them I was at the game, but I reached out and I said, listen, my father just passed away. I spent 6.5 hours at the stadium yesterday. Really love this team. And that's the 2013-14 A's teams. I really want to get back to the Bay Area to take care of my mom, who's still in the Bay Area. And it took 6 months, but the A's hired me. The position opened up for the head of corporate partnerships. And I came back to the Bay Area and launched this magical 4-year run that I had with the A's. John Fisher took over for Lou Wolf in terms of being the managing partner. Dave Cavill came in, replaced Michael Crowley as the president. There were sweeping changes in the organization, and many of us either left or were asked to leave. My time ended, and I moved here to Las Vegas to launch a second division soccer team, the Las Vegas Lights Football Club. You mentioned Europe and the relationship between soccer fans and their clubs. Spending half of my childhood overseas and half of my career working in professional soccer in the US and the other half living in the States, being a baseball fan and working in professional baseball, I see it from both sides. And it was eye-opening, and it should have been a little bit of a warning what to expect when I got to town in January of 2014. There was a Save Our Sports meeting going on, and it was the Raiders, Warriors, and A's fans trying to make sure that the team stayed. And I said to some of the folks at the A's, who's going on behalf of the A's? And they literally said, oh, we don't talk to those groups. And I couldn't understand this. So I went anyways, and I met a bunch of the guys from the right field bleachers and learned that the right field bleachers and left field bleachers were different and different personalities and different people. Dr. Death from the Raiders gave a speech that utterly blew then Mayor Kwan out of the water in terms of intelligence and substance and advocacy for his viewpoint. And I thought, wow, maybe Oakland is in trouble if the political elite, this is the best they can muster to, because there's a lot of smart A's, Raiders, and Warriors fans who had really strong opinions about that. So I stayed much more in touch with A's fans than I think my predecessors had. And I, you know, as you said, that the A's front office necessarily does, but that comes from soccer, where there's a healthy relationship and sometimes tension between a supporters group and a front office or an ownership group. And if you've been to a European soccer match or the right U.S. soccer match, and you see the passion of the fans, you recognize that what we're lucky enough to do in the front office, put on these events. I love the picture behind you, Hal, of the Coliseum there. But to put on these events, which for 3 hours a day, 81 times a summer, people can leave a lot of those worries behind, come to the ballpark, root for their favorite team, have a beer and a hot dog. And I still believe in that romantic notion of what baseball is, what it can be, what it can mean to the community. I firmly believe that sports has an ability to unite people in the way that other things can. I always put music and sports together. You can always start a conversation with who's your favorite artist or who's your favorite team and launch into a conversation with a complete stranger if you're in a new city. I think that sports have an opportunity to be a vehicle for development of young people and leadership and opportunities for kids and all those sorts of stuff. I love it when teams, organizations take that seriously. Like, you're part of the community, like make people proud to wear this this jersey, and, you know, make kids and families proud to support a team for all of the right reasons. I believe sports is a tremendous economic development generator. So I've loved my career in sports. I hope you get that I loved my time at the A's. I loved really kind of leaning into the A's fan side of me. So that's what I was trying to convey on Wednesday night, when in the course of the hearing in the afternoon, I was appalled that John Fisher wasn't there on his own to speak, to ask for $380 million. I really think if he'd had a 10-minute prologue with, "Hi, I'm John Fisher, and, you know, this is who I am, and this is what I've done in business, and this is what I've done with the A's for all these years and all these playoff appearances," whatever, that we could have had a done deal in an hour-long hearing and be out of there. But he chooses not to show up in that position. Then I was getting angry that Dave Cavill wasn't there. And then Senator Doñate calls him down and asks him about the entertainment tax. And four times he can't answer. And then I'm just getting angrier and angrier. And they put Catherine up to talk about community benefits. They put Yolanda up to talk about some impact. And I just felt like the A's had really swung and missed. And it felt like San Jose, Fremont, Laney College, Howard Terminal, all over again. And so it was spontaneous, kind of a last minute decision to try and drive down and see if we could catch the end of the hearing and maybe have a chance to testify. It was not really all that well thought out or planned or whatever. And but I realized I touched the nerve. Another person who I think recognizes how much the A's mean to Oakland, how much the A's mean to the East Bay, who I'm really privileged, fortunate, lucky enough that I can have some extra insight that other people don't have. I have a pedestal that I can use. And as a taxpayer in Clark County, Nevada right now, I'm directly impacted. So I was just sort of speaking really on behalf of myself more than anything. But what a crazy few days it has been.
Well, can you tell a story about that night? Because I know we were talking about it offline. You said
that you watched the hearings on, or you watched the hearings on YouTube basically for a few hours. You got dinner and then you came back home. You realized the hearings were still going on. You're like, oh, yep. Well, I might as well drive down to the Las yep. Vegas.
Yeah, went to the Grand.
The legislators are up in Carson City, right?
Correct. So, correct. When so you called I'd almost, in. I almost testified during the finance hearing 2 weeks previous and decided there would be another opportunity. And I would just, I reached out to my legislators directly without testifying publicly. But I literally said to my son, like, you want to go see how the sausage is made? Like, you want to go see how government works? Let's go down. Let's get in line. We literally walked in 5 minutes before they got to, let's listen to the opposition in Las Vegas. all the parking lots at the Sawyer building were locked. We couldn't get in. We parked on the loading dock and had to like run around and kind of slither through a fence and like knock on the door and have a security guard open the door. And he said, can I help you? And I said, is the hearing still going on? He said, yes. And I'm like, well, I'd like to go testify. And they ushered us up to the room. So, it was what it was. And if the assembly ever meets and takes up the assembly version of this funding bill, and there's an opportunity for public testimony, I imagine I'll go testify again. Again, I've reached out to my assemblywoman. I've reached out to my state senator. I've reached out to much of the leadership, some of whom I know casually in the community. And I'm more, you know, I'm looking at this from a taxpayer in Clark County, who also has a vested interest in, I think the A's belong in Oakland.
I think I read somewhere, if you divide that $380 million in money that they're going to receive from Nevada and Clark County, if you divide that evenly between every household in Nevada, every household in Nevada would be paying something like $330 to John Fisher to move there.
Yeah. Senator Nguyen, in sort of breaking down the financials and getting upset that nothing in the proposal had changed from the finance committee 10 days previous, yeah, she said, as I understand this, you're asking the public to put $36 million a year in for the first 5 years. That's $180 million up front to help kick off the building and all this. And then we're going to pay it back based on all these revenues, you know, down the road and taxes generated from the site and whatever. And I really thought about that. I think a lot of people in the Bay Area have understood the dynamic here in Nevada with the Republican governor who was elected by a less than 1% margin over the Democratic incumbent, facing a Democratic assembly and Senate that almost have a supermajority, and some real venom between the governor's office and the legislature over other issues that came up in our once every 2 years, 120-day session that just wrapped up last Monday. And so, the way this was introduced, the late hour at which this was introduced, it really gave the impression that the A's were sort of thinking they were going to take Nevada for a ride and basically just write their own deal. And, boom, as Dave Cavill likes to put on his Twitter feed, you know, deal's done. And, I thought we were 30 minutes away from a vote that was going to be a yes vote on Wednesday night. And clearly some things that, questions that were unanswered, details that are still have not been provided. I still haven't read the traffic impact that apparently feels like it has a big influence on people that, yeah, Nobody even seen it yet in this legislature. Like, if it's this important and it's $36 million a year and you just voted no on a bunch of services that, you know, many of us would think are a bigger priority than a baseball stadium right now, why do we have to slam this through in 1 5-hour hearing? Why don't we give this several months of review and vetting and analysis? That's in the aftermath of the finance hearing was the message that I was delivering to my legislators. You can't do this in this session. You need more time to decide if this is a good or a bad deal.
It's frustrating from, well, it's frustrating from, you know, A's fan standpoints where, you know, I feel, you know, one thing you said earlier really resonated with me when you said, well, they didn't, you know, the A's weren't going to send anybody to that fan meeting back in 2014. And, you know, the entire time that the A's were working through all of the Alameda County and Oakland City Council stuff, you know, I was thinking, why hasn't there been outreach to fan groups? You know, if, you know, I get it. And by the time of last season, once they'd sold, you know, all their players, but 2021, you know, it just didn't seem like they had, tried to use any of this clear passion that exists to get to a yes from Oakland City Council.
In the tradition that stretches from Raleigh Fingers to Dennis Eckersley to Sean Doolittle and Liam Hendricks, the A's need a closer. And when their only closer is Dave Cavill, who apparently at the last moment when you wouldn't have expected it, suddenly got camera shy and gun shy and didn't want to go in front of the legislature himself. I really feel like that a lot of this is on Dave, this strategy, the plan for Laney College, the way that crumbled and fell apart, the way the process has gone at Howard Terminal. If I'm not mistaken, weren't we less than $380 million apart on the $12 billion Howard Terminal development?
You are mistaken. We were, I think, maybe $80 million away.
That's what Casey was reporting. And it was, that's what's weird. Is they touted as $12 billion, but really, if you look at the slides they present, it's actually $6 billion. So I don't know where this, the other $6 billion comes from. You know, they just.
You were at the finish line. You were at the finish line for what would be a transformational project in the right part of town to really put Oakland baseball on the map forever. At Howard Terminal, you're a lot closer to the neighborhood where Ricky Henderson grew up and where Veda Pinson lived and where, you know, all those baseball guys, Joe Morgan, you know, all of that, like that, that area, you know, can, let's go, like, let's build from Howard Terminal outward, really develop, you know, that part of Oakland. So we were so close from what I've read, and you know, I'm where you are on that one. I'm out of town trying to understand what's happening. We were so close at Howard Terminal. Why would you leave that at the, you know, two outs in the ninth inning and you make an inexplicable call to the bullpen and go to Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think why the mayor originally seemed so furious when they announced this land plan in
the Wild
Las Vegas.
West land.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So it was very confusing. You know, it was very confusing for everybody because this was just a bunch of leaks. And everyone was, but the mayor just came out and she was furious. And what it turned out later was they had hired a mediator to help them with negotiations. The mediator had set up a summit that week. And in fact, that Wednesday that it leaked, the city of Oakland apparently was waiting in the conference room for the A's to show up. They called and they said, we're not coming today. And then a few hours later, they said, oh, this land deal leaked. And, you know, who knows what actually happened? There's part of me that thinks that the A's were worried that they were going to be able to come to an agreement and that they had figured, you know, I bet we can get a bunch of free money if we go to Las Vegas. Whereas in Oakland, you know, they're holding our feet to the fire on a number of different things. So, it just, none of it seems to like completely make sense to A's fans, and it's heartbreaking. You know, I hear a lot of fans have told sort of stories online of their own interactions with Dave Cavill, and one that I've heard a number of times. So I never met him in his office, but people talk about how they would go to his office and he had a seat from, I think it's Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, where the Browns used to play. And he would talk about, oh, you know, I grew up as a Browns fan, and that's a seat from a stadium from an owner who left. And it's heartbreaking to think that the way that he came in with A's fans to say, I hear you, I've been through that same pain, we're going to do everything we can to not do that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Sort of forgotten about the early days of Cavill and the office hours, and really that sort of do it all vivacious mentality that, you know, at the end of the day, I'm with you up in the third deck, and that's where I like to watch the games. And you know, we're reopening the third deck, because if you want to watch there and have a cheaper ticket, why don't we do that? I hear the fans, et cetera. But I do remember also all those comments about, I know what it felt like as a Clevelander to lose your team. So anyway, so here we are waiting on pins and needles.
Well, I was going to say, it seems like you were part of this mass exodus. It seemed like 2017, 2018, around that era, a lot of the marketing people, a lot of the creative people in the social departments that I knew, they left. And I don't know if you're at liberty to really talk about this, but was there like a culture shift that happened a few years ago, or like, because it seemed like they were making an effort, you know, like while you were there, and then all of a sudden, it's to me, from the outside observer, it seemed like 2018, 2019, kind of with Chris Giles, they were making good efforts. And then 2020 happened, the pandemic happened. And ever since then, it's just been, you know, zero effort at all, basically.
I can't speak for how the organization reacted to during and after the pandemic. I do feel for any business owner, any person who lost their job, that was an inexplicable, different time in U.S. history. But in 2017 and 2018, before the pandemic, virtually every director level person in community, public relations, marketing, corporate partnerships, concessions, I could go on and on, human resources, and other places, was either asked to leave or left because they saw the writing on the wall. Incredible loss of institutional knowledge. You're absolutely right. It happened. All of your friends in the, you know, departments that you mentioned left for one reason or another. I feel like I was the third or fourth generation of corporate partnerships people that were brought in on the promise of, you're going to sell the naming rights to the new stadium. Like, of all the things I've done in sports, I don't know that I've ever sold naming rights to a stadium, and it's the one thing I wanted to do. You know, while I was there, we put the giant backlit Cash Creek sign up over the third base side, and there's a really long story about why we could put a sign there and we couldn't put it anywhere else. And it just happens to be between the goalposts of a extra point or field goal for in the Raiders football environment. Like, it's there for a reason. Anyways, we're able to do some exciting things, some creative things. But the lure was, Steve, you and your team are going to sell naming rights and all the suites in the new ballpark, which we were building towards Laney College at that point.
Yeah.
And candidly, all the group that has replaced me in that era, they're all long gone too. So now we're on like generation six. Like, I know people that were going to sell the Gridiron facility in San Jose. You had all sorts of files around Fremont. What was it going to be called?
Cisco Field. Yeah.
Cisco Field. Saw all those things again. Laney, Howard Terminal, etc. But yes, there's been several generations of turnover within the front office. with the exception of David Rennetti, who they might as well, you know, name the new stadium after.
Build
the,
a statue.
Go away with it and just call it Rennetti Park, right?
Yeah, give that man a statue. He's, but you know,
the baseball people were there from start to finish, and Billy and David Forrest and Voos and Mickey and some of those folks, great people. Some of them are still there. They are the heart and soul of that organization, from what A's fans really love. Like, we should be talking about whether Esturi Ruiz is, you know, a long-term option for us in center field, as opposed to be talking about what Las Vegas said or what some state senator said or whatever. But like, baseball, like, you know, we haven't said a word about baseball yet. We haven't talked about the pitching staff. We haven't talked about, you know, whatever. But the baseball people were amazing, and I often felt if the same rigor was applied to the business side that was applied to the baseball side, with the same, you had plenty of smart people who just wanted to be empowered to make, you know, good things happen. One of the years I was there was the last time we were over 2 million in fans, I think 16, maybe 15, one of those. And that's 25,000 fans a game, which is exactly what we're, you know, they're talking about is going to happen here in Las Vegas. We worked really hard on those fireworks nights, on those giveaways, on the Cespedes t-shirts that we had to send off to wherever when we traded him 4 days before Cespedes night. Like, you remember all these things.
Yeah.
There was a really bright group of people in place at the A's, and candidly, I don't know most of the people at the A's any longer. The turnover has been extreme, with the exception of Rennetti and Steve Finelli and some of the ticket sales team, the stadium operations team, and the ticket sales team. They're, you know, whatever. Cavill had a different vision, John Fisher had a different vision of who was going to take the A's to the new ballpark, and we're still waiting. My son, who testified to folks after me on Wednesday, I remember telling him he would have been in about sixth grade, that with any luck he would, you know, be there for opening day in a new ballpark before he graduated. And he said, high school? I said, no, college. And he's about to be college, and we're still waiting, and that's obviously not going to happen. So anyhow, it's
hope he goes to grad school like Hal.
You know? You can keep going. You can keep going.
You didn't say what, you said you graduate.
They'll eventually start paying you to be at school. Not very much, but you know. Here, what would have been your dream corporate sponsorship for the new stadium? Who did you want the stadium to be named after?
I don't know. And I don't think they're partners anymore. Cache Creek Casino Resort. Are they sponsors anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so. Forget.
I don't know that they are, but so.
they might still be in the stadium somewhere.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other night, and thinking about the referendum on sports betting last year that was soundly voted down by California residents, in part because I think it usurped tribal rights that they have in perpetuity with their compact. But for a billion, so if DraftKings and FanDuel and Caesars, I think, put $500 million into that referendum, if any one of them, let's say DraftKings or FanDuel, were to put enough money to just go buy the A's and basically own the team, let's make this DraftKings Stadium, and then start from the position of California residents to work with tribes like the tribe that operates Cache Creek Casino and Treasure Mountain, Treasure Valley, you know, et cetera. I think you could quickly, one, legalize sports betting in California, and two, find a committed corporate investor that has a reason to want to invest in baseball in California. Who's my dream sponsor? Kaiser. a company with deep East Bay roots, Clorox.
Wait, listen to this.
In any of the tech companies, Spotify, Pandora, whichever one's in downtown Oakland.
Yeah, Salesforce.
What if Clorox just sponsored the bleachers?
I tried. It was free. Clorox bleachers. Tried that for 20 years. That big State Farm sign in red over your right shoulder. We wanted that to be a Clorox.
The Clorox.
Oh, the Clorox bleachers. Oh, it's just written in there.
Exactly.
Well, Steve, one thing I noticed about your comment is you said, you know, you worked with Dave Cavill, you worked with Catherine Aker. What is Dave Cavill like when there's not a microphone around? And have you ever spoken with John Fisher? I'm really curious. Like,
sure.
Level executive, do you ever even interact with the owner? Because he seems so clandestine, you know?
I have met John Fisher. I've interacted a little bit with John Fisher. He seems like a decent human being that maybe if he just sold a couple pieces of art, he could, you know, get over the $80 million at Howard Terminal or a couple hundred million dollars here in Las Vegas. I don't think Dave Cavill is evil. He's intelligent. He's clever. His passion, is clear. I interacted a lot with Dave because I had been at Major League Soccer. With Dave, I could talk about soccer, and with Billy Bean, I could talk about soccer. And there's not that many people that play in both the baseball worlds and the soccer worlds, but there were two, Billy and Dave, two pretty good, good ones to have. So, I don't have a grudge against Dave or anything like that. But like I said, the A's need a closer right now, and it does not appear that Dave Cavill has been able to close the deal that John Fisher wants anywhere, any more than previous administrators were. So, that's my.
Yeah. No, thanks for the insight, because I knew that was the most striking thing. You know, people could say what you said, but the fact that you had, you know, been in the trenches with these people, you had worked with them, it gives it more credibility, you know. So I think that's what it was, the most interesting part. And I think that's why I got such a strong reaction, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to make about 5 points. One, that John Fisher.
2 minutes. You got 2 minutes to make your point.
Exactly. Not enough time. But one,
let's go. John Fisher, 2 minutes. Start.
John Fisher should be there. Two, that if the A's in the moments that they did choose to speak for themselves could better answer the questions, like Dave Cavill in the live entertainment tax question, we maybe would be a little bit further along. Three, I think it's really disingenuous of the A's to talk about $1 million in community benefits in this. I think Catherine said that they were pledging 1% of ticket revenue in the new ballpark for community events. And I quickly did the math, 2 million fans times $60 a ticket is $120 million. That 1% is 1.2 million. However you slice it, it's a pittance. And we just went through a 5-year process of replacing almost every high school football field in Clark County School District. We have like 25 high schools that had just awful fields, and the Raiders chipped in and built 5 of them, and they changed a lot of them from grass to turf. And I think it cost something like $3 million a field or something like this. Yeah. $1 million is a drop in the bucket.
And to get a youth field done. Yeah.
Yeah. And to try and suggest that was evidence of the A's sincerity. I just thought that was really overstated.
So benevolent, right? Yeah, so benevolent. Yeah.
point four, they had talked about how affordable it was going to be. It's not going to be affordable for a family of 4 or 5 like I have. Aviators games, my son said it, are $18 to get in the park for the cheapest ticket in the ballpark. What makes us think that an A's ticket is going to be anything less than double that? And then the fifth point, which I can't even remember if I got to or not, I had a chance to go to Minnesota to visit the Twins walk around their ballpark, meet my counterparts at the Twins. They are on the smallest urban footprint in baseball. They're on 8.5 acres, and it's a unique situation. Urban, the stadium is built more vertical than horizontally. It still takes up 8.5 acres, and the A's were talking about all of the ancillary revenues created by their 9 acres. There's no room left. I thought that the 9 acres out of the 36 is also just one of those numbers that we really need to be questioning and talking about, because if you're taking $180 million of land, which is allegedly what it's worth, out of the tax system for the next 30 years at that corner of all places, is that the best use of that land? So those were the points that I was trying to make. It was not, it's not personal against Dave. It's not a grudge or anything that I have against the organization. Again, my perspective was, I'm a Clark County taxpayer, and I have some, I can see holes in this. I hope my legislators can see the same holes and at least ask all the questions. If they do all the correct due diligence and they hear from their constituents and they decide that this is the right thing for Las Vegas and the state of Nevada to do for economic development terms, I'm a sports fan. I would love to have an MLB team here, but the way it was done, the way the last 2 weeks has transpired here in the legislature and then with these special sessions, I think the A's botched the ninth inning in this one. They botched the ninth inning of the first game of the doubleheader in Oakland. And then, that game is going to be completed at a later date, and they started a new series, and they totally botched it, in my opinion.
You know, I think one of the things that was just boiled my blood the most is this whole community benefits saga. You know, I think that there's one side to it, which was the confusing, lurching weirdness that the A's, were doing when they were trying to do a community benefits package in Oakland, where they organized all these meetings and got everyone really excited. And it seems like everyone who was, I was never a part of that, but people who were a part of it said, and then, all of a sudden they just sort of pulled the plug, didn't even tell anybody. They just stopped hosting meetings and told everybody, oh, by the way, we're not, we were glad to get everyone to the table, but we're not going to pay for any of this, obviously. And then the madness of all these legislatures saying, well, we need more certainty on community benefits and all this stuff. And, you normally don't have that, when somebody moves to a new place, if it's a person or a business, because what community benefits are is you just pay your taxes, and then that's enforced. The government collects the money, and then they can spend it on the community. But we have to do this whole song and dance because the A's are asking to be exempted from nearly every imaginable tax. And it's just.
Yeah. And I think it was State Senator Flores who was asking about community benefits.
Yeah, he was kind of championing that. Yeah.
And trying to get straight answers. And I don't need my legislators to be baseball fans. I don't really need them to be sports economists. I need them to be focusing on community welfare, on public safety, on the education system that my kids have just gone through, higher education, et cetera. And if people who I know and respect in our legislature don't feel like they can even cast a vote because they don't have enough information, they haven't slept in 2 weeks, they haven't even seen the bill until a couple days ago, we're fighting over just getting a budget approved so we don't have a state government shutdown 18 days from now on July 1st. And it was disingenuous. It was I think Catherine trying to paint this picture like this is going to be incredible benefits. And it was Senator Flores who said,
yeah,
I sat on the committee that went through this at length with the Raiders on the construction of Allegiant Stadium. And there's a very, very robust community benefits package there. And even as good as that was and as well developed as that was, many of those promises weren't kept. And what are we holding? And, you know, there's no point in comparing the two, an NFL building versus an MLB building or concert facility, how it was funded. But Senator Flores was smartly saying, this community benefits doesn't make sense to me. And I thought it would be easiest to just talk about $1 million. Catherine made reference to 12,000 classrooms. Well, if an average school has 100 classrooms, you know, we're only talking about 100 schools, and in the size of the Bay Area, that's a ridiculously low impact that they're having. There's 350 schools in the Clark County School District. So all these things that they were just trying to like snow us over with, you know, some charts and data. So I was angry. By the time I spoke, I was angry.
Yeah. And, you know, I could hear, you know, it also just kind of sounded like when Catherine Akers got up there, you could, I think I was listening to that just in earphones. I wasn't even watching it. I was on a run or something. And I just was thinking, I don't know if, you know, this seems like a student who tried to start their homework, the day it was due or something, you know?
Yeah. I think the question is, why couldn't Cavill represent the A's? Why did he have to hire 3 out of the 4 people who would speak on behalf of the A's, who are Nevada residents, who knows if they've ever been to an A's game in their life?
Jeremy Aguero, right? I think he's very central to this whole thing because he's basically been the mouthpiece of the A's throughout this whole process. And he's technically a third party, you know, but it seems like he's a hired gun by the A's just from the outside observer, you know.
Jeremy is, I would say, has been well respected here, was very involved in the Raiders project, went to work for the Raiders. Has anybody really looked into the irony of how Mark Davis, after the entire Raiders front office turned over 2 years ago here in Las Vegas, and there's major allegations of financial impropriety. He hires Jeremy Aguero to be chief strategy officer and to basically, write the Raiders image and, you know, create the financial footprint for the Raiders moving forward. Jeremy left within 6 or 7 months of his tenure at the Raiders for, of all people, to pop up and suddenly be the mouthpiece of a former Oakland sports team in Las Vegas. It's really ironic. So go Google Jeremy Aguero at the Raiders. As you said, he is central. I think he's actually very smart. And but why couldn't John Fisher and Dave Cavill make the ask themselves?
Yeah.
The other point that I made was Vegas is built on these big families, philanthropist families, Steve Wynn, Kirk Kerkorian at Caesars, the Gaughan family, the Fertittas. John Fisher could be a hero in this town if he brought Major League Baseball, built a state-of-the-art facility, and, you know, open the Fisher Art Gallery, because we don't have a contemporary art museum in Las Vegas. He could have this town eating out of his palm in a heartbeat if they just sort of approached it the right way. But as I said, they really blew the presentation.
So as you understand, is Aguero no longer with the Raiders? Because I'm looking at his LinkedIn. Yeah. It says he still says he's there, but I guess I mean it's only LinkedIn. But yeah,
no, he left the Raiders. I believe it was 7 months after he started in the last 18 months.
Interesting. That kind of changed. Like, so he's just applied analytics, which he started basically is his main deal, right? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And Las Vegas Economic Development, or the Greater LV, did I get my all my acronyms, but the big economic development agency.
LVCVA?
No, no, that's Convention Visitors Authority. The statewide economic development agency.
Okay.
Basically, Jeremy has been driving their long-term economic analysis for a decade as Nevada diversifies from just being a gaming capital to a technology capital to Tesla and manufacturing in Northern Nevada, sports now. And to our community's credit, it has diversified impressively over the past even 6 years since I've been here. So Jeremy was probably the right guy to help steer this, but he shouldn't have been the guy to make the big pitch and ask for the money any more so than Steve Hill should have been.
Yeah. So Steve, this was a great conversation. I really appreciate you giving us some time.
Thank you, man.
So
I really appreciate it, baby.
Yeah, I want to sort of wrap up with what was your favorite, what was the favorite project you work on or your favorite memory when you were in the front office of the A's? What was maybe something that fans would have heard of too, you know?
So, the first Pride Night in 2014 or 15, Sean Doolittle's now wife, girlfriend at the time, got involved on social media and was supporting some local organizations. And, it was one of those special ticket events. It wasn't a giveaway for everybody, yep, but we were going to have a Pride Night. And, they changed the scoreboards to rainbow and played some different music between innings than they normally would or whatever. And throughout the game, there was dancing in the aisles and the concourses whenever they play music. And there was just a joy and a spirit that was very different from a typical A's game. And it was a huge hit. And I remember that the A's came from behind and won that game, I don't know, 11-10 or some crazy, like it had a fairy tale ending. For the A's to take the leap that the Giants had started down the road of 20 years previous and celebrate Pride with their fans, that's a game that always sticks out in my mind. I had so many amazing memories. It's hard to pick any moving, all the fan fests and dealing with the rain and the muddy fields and all that in a couple of years, and then moving it to Jack London Square where it still rained, but changing the whole feel of that event to get closer to the fans. I love that. I pushed for and organized the play ball opening day 5K 2 or 3 times, and then I think that's gone away. Different ways to involve different segments of the community, and really learning about Oakland. Much of the A's front office lives over the hill in Walnut Creek and Danville and Pleasanton and Livermore, and that's great, for whatever
or
reason.
Atherton.
Right. I lived in El Cerrito, and more often than not, I'd get on BART at El Cerrito and I would get off at the Coliseum and walk across the bridge and enjoy every single day. Like I'm showing up in a Major League Baseball stadium to try and generate revenue so that, the 2014 team with the 7 All-Stars can deliver amazing memories for our fans. I could go on and on and on about how much fun I had at the A's. My son one year attended 45 of the 81 games when Commissioner Manfred came to town on his introductory tour of all the Major League ballparks. I snuck Declan into our staff meeting with the commissioner. Commissioner's points 1, 2, and 3 were baseball had to get younger and connect to young fans, and we needed more Sonny Grays that young fans would attend to. And I asked Declan for a question that I could ask on his behalf, and Declan said, why don't we ask the commissioner who his baseball heroes are? You've talked about Sonny Gray and this new generation. And the commissioner answered that the first game he ever went to at Yankee Stadium, Mickey Mantle hit two home runs. And in a couple of years previous to this, the MLB staff had found highlights of this game in the summer of 50, whatever, when Mickey Mantle hit two home runs. And the commissioner now carries it on his phone as a memory of where his love of baseball started, because this was the game he was at. And so doing things like that with my son and the rest of my family, my wife and my other kids, was always a kick. The kicker to that one is I got called into a higher executive's office that day and said that I had violated team policy by bringing my son to a like closed event to meet the commissioner. And I'm like, come on now. Like they come said, on. If every A's employee brought their kids there, it would have been romper room. And I said, you know, you all know my kid. He's in my office all the time. He's always in a dual jersey. He's always in our family seats. He wouldn't let me leave till every game was over, you know, even if the A's had lost, you know, by 10 plus runs. And you're going to call me on the carpet for, you know, bringing him to meet. I have a picture of him with the commissioner at the podium. Like it's
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I had so many, I had so many great experiences, yeah. So many things that were just so A's as well, but loved being at virtually every game from well before gates opening till after the last out. Working in soccer, working in minor league baseball, one of the things I always loved to do was sort of position myself near exit gates after a game and just thank people for coming. And I think it's one of the easiest ways to generate goodwill. And you get some guys like, my hot dog was cold. I'm like, talk to Hal next game. I'm sure we'll take care of it, right? but the others are like, man, this was so great. You know, thanks for that great game. Like, I didn't do anything. Like, the A's relationship with the A's fans' relationships with the players and the team is really, really special. And it reminds me of soccer supporters groups and their relationship with teams. It's a shame that A's ownership can't figure out how to close the deal and give the East Bay what the community is absolutely begging for.
It is, you know, I think I've said this a few times on this podcast, but like, you know, you reminding me of standing by the exits and thanking people for coming, you know, it is such a pleasure to work in a baseball stadium, especially if people start to know you, mm-hmm. And because it's just such a place of joy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's like to be a billionaire. But if I was a billionaire and I bought my toy and my toy was a baseball team, like, why wouldn't you be that guy standing by the exits, you know, shaking people's hand? My favorite book as a kid was, I don't know if you ever read it, was
The Beck Bill is Vex. The Wreck.
Yeah. Amazing book.
Exactly.
Amazing book. And he talks about he would, you know, when he would just take, he would sit in the front seat of cabs so he could talk to the cab driver about, you know, his relationship with the team and the city and stuff. And it's just,
and to his credit, Cavill did and said all the right things
Cavill
when he
did
got
that.
To town, and he was going to be the president of the people. And I was really encouraged for a long time.
Yeah.
But again, whether it's Cavill's fault or Fisher's fault, couldn't close the deal.
I'll tell you what, that Fans Fest that you're so proud of, they had one in 2020, right before it was over. And then they canceled it in 2021 because of Corona, and then 2022 because of the lockout. So they finally had another Fans Fest, and it was a happy hour at the bowling alley in Howard Terminal. No players, nobody. The only person from the team, I think, was the public address announcer.
Wasn't Stomper there?
Stomper.
I think Stomper.
Yeah,
made
Stomper,
it, right?
Was,
yeah, Stomper was there.
Stomper
right?
was there.
Yeah,
they
was
threw
that
Stomper
point.
In the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's it.
That sends me. Oh goodness, yeah. We could talk all day and talk all night. So tomorrow, A's fans are going to make their voices heard on Tuesday with this reverse boycott. I'll be watching. I'm really interested to see how local California, local Nevada, and national media cover this, because I think the outcome of the last 2 weeks has been much, much more public support on against A's ownership and the way that this has transpired. So it'll be really interesting for me to hear how it goes. I don't want to end on the MLB blackout situation, but I can't even watch the A's in Las Vegas. Or
what? You're blacked out too?
We're one of six blackout. A's are one of six blackout teams in Las Vegas. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to see baseball.
I heard they're blacked out in Hawaii too. It's like, dude, what are they doing? Like, what are they going to drive to fly in from Hawaii, catch the game real quick? Like, what are they doing?
Is it even possible to get NBC Sports California in Las Vegas? Like, why aren't they blacked out?
Can get them on DirecTV possibly, and because that they're blacked out, but on the primary cable I can't get it, and I can't buy the package. It's crazy, but no, that's another topic entirely. Thank you so much for having me. Love talking baseball. I thought we would do this for like 15 minutes and it's been an hour, but my pleasure. And believe me, if there's another opportunity to testify publicly, I will likely reiterate my thoughts on how the A's could maybe approach this a little bit differently to get a little bit warmer reception. But we shall see.
Well, thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Steve. Thanks a lot for your time, man.
Great. My pleasure. Talk to you guys.